this is Autumn.
And this is Jedediah with Dystopia Rising Oregon.
And you're listening to KBOO Radio. And welcome to Radio Geekly. And you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. And my name is Becky. I'm joined by Godiva. Say hello.
Hi.
Hi. We are a collective consisting of geeks from all perspectives who have come together to discuss all things geek. Yes. And we have quite the show for you.
I'm really excited.
Yeah. This time we're going to be continuing our exploration of gaming by looking at a specific type of gaming. So it may not surprise you gamers out there, but for everybody else, gaming has a huge world of different types and sort of activities. Role-playing games like Dungeons and Dragons and stuff are a big part of it, but so is the aspect of live-action role-play, or otherwise known as, get it?
LARPing.
LARPing.
Yeah.
So what we're going to be looking at today is two groups that do incredible LARPing activities. They have a variety of games. They are exploring different different perspectives and ideas, going from this sort of sci-fi apocalyptic fantasy world to like more socially engaged, looking at really hard topics kind of gaming. So let's talk a little bit about what our perspectives are, our experiences with LARPing have been. Have you LARPed before?
I have never. I actually looked into events that were going on the month leading up to the show, but they were all on the weekend and I work on the weekend.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I tried. I did. So I have absolutely no experience. The interviews with Taylor Stokes and Dystopia Rising are like mm-hmm. the only exposure that I've had.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, what a great way to learn about it. My LARPing experience has gone back a long, long way when I had friends who were really involved with the Society for Creative Acronym in Florida. And I never went myself because it was just a little too difficult. But I saw the amount of work that they had to put into like the period pieces and gathering all of their period specific materials and stuff in order to participate. So, but that's different,
yeah,
a little bit from what we're talking about because you found that out.
Yeah, I actually we had to cut out an interview with a woman named Kimri who actually explained all that stuff, how SCA is different from LARPing, because SCA is more of it takes place in between 400 and 1600
mm-hmm.
AD, and they're very strict about their dress code,
oh, yeah,
and their props, as opposed to LARPing, which she also described as like the outfits are up to kind of personal discretion.
Mm-hmm.
If people, at least for the independent games, want to show up in their sweatshirts,
oh, yeah,
whatever is comfortable, or as opposed to if your character wears a corset, whatever helps you keep in character, because that would obviously limit your moves
mm-hmm.
a lot.
Absolutely. And also LARPing is centered on a goal. So like a game, you have a specific objective, whether or not that is to survive or to find the prize, or, you know, it's a little more directed than simply living a week, perhaps, in the life of folks that were around in the 1700s.
Yeah.
And so, and LARPing has so much that ties into a number of other sort of activities like, theater and like I mentioned D&D and, childhood play where you pretend to be somebody else and, play a game.
Well, it seems very versatile. It literally translates live action role play.
Yeah.
And again, bringing up Kimri's interview, which we couldn't fit in today, she described it can be a number of different scenarios.
Oh,
whatever
yeah.
role play you want to play, whether it's back in England in the 1500s, or if you want to do like 1920s diner.
Oh yeah,
totally. There's like a murder Steampunk. Investigation, or yeah, it can literally be anything.
Yeah, I and one of the other experiences I had was with this sort of combat system in the woods where you had like boffers or whatever, like really soft sort of weaponry, or if you were a spellcaster, you had little sacks. And so you threw that and it worked off of a point system, but also you could lose a limb, hypothetically, you know, like if somebody hit you with a sword on your arm, then...
Do you have to walk around with your arm bent like it's knocked off?
No, you just can't move it. It'd be on your... I think it's a little more ergonomically okay to have it on your side than it went like, I'm all craned back.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So we're going to take a look at one of our interviewees. Would you introduce this piece? It was Taylor, right?
Yeah. With Robert Lacoste. Yeah. Robert Lacoste introduces Taylor Stokes, and he's with Indie Hurricane and Games Together, and they're both indie live action role plays.
Absolutely. Let's listen to this piece.
I'm Robert Lacoste, and I'm here with Taylor Stokes. Taylor is with us from Games Together, as well as Indie Hurricane, and we're going to be talking about LARPs, and or indie LARPs. So, Taylor, why don't you give us the lowdown on, say, the groups? You know, what do you guys do? When do you meet? You know, what's the nature of what you do?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. I'm very humbled to be invited to talk about this stuff. Games Together is a local 501c3 nonprofit that explores positive action through play. And that means a lot of things. But mostly it means that we play and make games that are about socially relevant matters. Games that are socially inquisitive or personally expressive.
So maybe give us an example of what it means to be socially inquisitive in a game.
What I mean by that is a game that that explicitly features a subject that is socially relevant or that examines social structures. For example, we recently played a game at the GameStorm convention, which I'll get to in a moment, called The Line by Jason Morningstar. This is a game that, well, it's about a lot of things, but in this case, I'm going to focus on the fact that it's about immigration. It's dressed up in a science fiction setting, so it's not like appropriating from any real world situation, but it is heavily inspired by recent refugee situations and people who are trying to seek asylum in another country, in another culture that they may not know or understand very well, and attempting to penetrate a bureaucracy that is completely foreign to them. And it's a game that's about other, amongst other things, it's about powerlessness. So it puts players in this fictional setting and offers a kind of interactive simulation that hopefully would give those players a little bit more context about what these situations are actually like.
Now, do some players play, say, the customs agents, and some players play the refugees? Or
That's correct. Two players who are facilitating the game play the customs agents, and the rest of the players are playing refugees seeking asylum.
So when we say being, what was the term again?
Socially inquisitive.
Socially inquisitive. It refers to almost a socio-political investigation.
Yeah, you could say that.
Would you say games are political by nature, or is there a larger thing that we should draw from that?
Oh, that's a really big question.
I'll just go out there and say, as a designer, all design is political, as far as I'm concerned. And then when I put my game designer hat on, I can't divorce myself from the origin of that. So as a designer, all design is political. Therefore, as a game designer, all game design is political, or at least in my mind.
Yeah, I follow what you're saying, although I do think that games explore that to different degrees, right? Like any other piece of art or media, there's a context in which it's created, and there's a context in which the designer lives, and you know, that's a part of that creative process to some extent. I don't think that all games necessarily approach political issues head-on or intend to make an investigation, to use your term, but some do, and those I find really interesting. I would like to point out that there is a lot of responsibility on game designers who prompt those investigations to do so responsibly and thoroughly, and that can be, well, that's one of the challenges of writing these games.
Now, let's talk about LARPs in general. So how do you define a LARP? Well, of course, it's a live-action role-play, but, like, what does one do when one LARPs?
I guess I'm going to offer my personal perspective on this.
Sure.
I think of these games and similar related inquiries as a kind of live-action thought experiment. like there are many different styles of games. With the games, the kinds of games that I play most, or the kinds of scenarios that I enjoy the most, what you're doing is you're being dropped into a context which you may or may not have a great deal of familiarity with, but a context that has some certain defined parameters or boundaries, and you're just asked to feel and think and do. Some people get intimidated by the fact that a lot of these appear to be very improv-heavy, and I guess you could look at like live-action role-playing as kind of like large-scale improvisatory situation.
Totally.
And that's not really wrong. I don't think that's really the full story either.
Well, I think there's something to be said for act of play, giving license to what being yourself or being another person or claiming you're another person and actually being yourself and diffusing some potentially what social anxiety or social restrictions that might hold you back. So I want to say that's part of the equation where we get into that ragged line between LARP and improv and where those things cross over. Because in improv, the whole idea is to like continue the storyline. And then, oh, yes, and... And if you shut down a storyline, it's generally, well, in improv, it's looked at as a, you know, poo-poo, faux pas. But in LARP, I could see how you have so many storylines, like, potentially emerging, and you have multiple narrators that, yeah, you want to see where the narrative goes in this twisty, windy snake of creation.
Right. Some LARPs use what I consider to be really thick characters. What I mean by that... The character, like, you're stepping into another role, and in many, like, traditional American LARPs, these are very highly detailed. And you've got this whole other personality that has nothing to do with you, that, you know, has a history and all these things, and you're given all this information.
When you say highly detailed, are we talking, like, 1 8.5 by 11 page?
I would consider that highly detailed.
Okay.
I know of other games that have characters that are much longer than that, or people that, like, workshop their characters to a much greater extent. And other scenarios use what are called thin characters, just like tiny short descriptions. And there's a reason for this technique. And that's so that you're not like creating this fictional buffer between you and the experience that you're having while you're engaging with the scenario.
Mm-hmm.
The result is that you end up bringing a lot more of your own emotional content into play. It's just a director impact. And when we're talking about socially inquisitive games, like, I think that, I won't like generalize for everything, but in most cases, that is a much more effective approach. Because what, like, if I'm designing a socially inquisitive game, or
thick,
a game with...
Thick characters or thin characters?
Thin characters.
Thin characters for socially inquisitive games.
If I'm designing that, then I'm designing it because I want you, the player, to have, like, a certain range of emotional experiences. And I want you to tell me about that at the end. And I want you to reflect on that. Being able to, like, get at your emotional experience is absolutely essential for that style of play. And I think that this is where, you know, amongst other things, some live-action traditions, like, part ways with others.
What would be a tangent from, say, one camp to another camp in LARP?
American, what is currently referred to as American-style LARP, tends to involve, like, mechanics-heavy, huge stories, huge numbers of players. In some cases, they use props like padded weaponry and stuff to simulate combat. Personally, I'm not interested in that style of live-action play. I'm not by any means, like, passing judgment on people that do or that style generally, but that's just not what I came for. I'm much more interested in the scenario-driven, or in scenarios, as some groups call them, which are extremely focused, much smaller, usually played in just a few hours, and have extremely clear boundaries and mechanics about how to explore whatever its subject is. And it's in this camp that most of the, like, socially relevant and most potent experiences are. We have a number of European, in particular Scandinavian-style LARPs that evolved into what we currently call scenarios. And we now have an emerging genre in America, which is sometimes referred to as American freeform, or just freeform, which is a word, I hate that term. It's so non-committal.
So, yeah, I feel that references both, what, radio and poetry.
Yeah,
it's really
nebulous.
Yeah.
But there's a reason for that, and that's because basically no one really agrees like what clearly defines something as a freeform game.
But maybe it could be agreed upon that it all departs from traditional LARP, which is where the boffers...
It definitely departs from traditional LARP, and it like draws on traditions like the indie role-playing and story game design, like focused design processes, the Scandinavian scenarios, and definitely diverging from traditional American LARP. That is kind of where American Freeform lives. And it has a lot in common with... scenarios like Scandinavian scenarios, too much, or to the point where I'm not sure that you could actually clearly differentiate between the two, except that one was made by someone who lives in Scandinavia and this one was made by an American. And that's because these things use customized mechanics and structures to specifically address whatever their subject is. So there's no standardization. You can't really make assumptions, generally speaking, about what these games are necessarily going to be like, other than that they're about something specific and that they have mechanics and structures that are simple, elegant, and absolutely like hardwired, to borrow one of my colleagues' terms, to its theme. Like it's inseparable.
You're speaking my language. Simple, elegant, and hardwired to the theme.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
and that's one of the things that I really enjoy about scenarios and freeform. Is that, like, you get a game text for this, and there may be, like, a handful of pages in many cases. It's not, like, this huge, giant process to create, like, a dictionary-sized rule book full of all these contingencies. It's simple and expressive.
So I wanted to segue onto just asking the question. So you just mentioned getting the rule book. And you've mentioned Scandinavia as a sort of a source for many interesting things. How does one get a LARP from Scandinavia? Is there like a ScandinaviaLARP.com?
Almost. So the Stockholm Scenario Festival keeps an ongoing archive of all of the games that they play, and that's freely available online. Many of those scenarios are in English. Some are not. As someone who does not speak Danish or Swedish, I have successfully like Google translated my way through some of the non-English documents into something that's rough but playable.
Pretty cool.
So that's definitely doable. Like, I'm not saying that that's easy, but that's quite a bit. There's also Alexandria.dk, which is where many of the scenarios at Fastival, which is another Scandinavian, like the mothership Scandinavian like scenario convention. Many of those end up there, but I think not all. I don't exactly know how or why things show up there. It's mysterious to me, but there are many there. I generally, if I'm just looking for stuff like to play in my home community, those are like my first stops to like... to looking for new things. Otherwise, like, I know a lot of these people now, so I get things kind of through word of mouth, but that's not generally accessible.
So we can go to those convention websites and maybe have a few...
Yeah, just to Google Stockholm Scenario Festival and click on their archives, and they probably have, like, 100 or so scenarios up there right now from the past.
Dude, that's awesome.
Yeah, that's... mad props to them for making a reliable archive on what they're doing out there.
So let's say I'm a Portlander. How would I find a LARP in Portland? Or an indie LARP? Or, you know, maybe you want to define LARP and indie LARP first, quickly, and then say where I could find either or both.
So, but if you're looking to play like a scenario, then... Games to Gather is the only place in Portland that is exploring those at like the community level. There might be some small pockets of like private groups or something, but I don't think that I'm pretty sure that like sometimes people in like the story game community in Seattle or something will dabble into this stuff. But generally speaking, like there isn't another community organization that I'm aware of anywhere near here that's really like exploring those things at the community level.
Tell us what we can find and where.
So you would want to visit meetup.com/gamestogather or gamestogather.org or find Games Together on Facebook. We have both a page and a group, and all of our events get to all of those places. You would want to keep your eye out for Games for the Human Heart and Freeform Free-for-Alls. Those are the two things that we mostly do, our freeform stuff. I can sometimes sneak like scenario stuff into our Ready Set Game events, but that's if it happens to be convenient, because the thing with scenarios is that they have sometimes interesting logistical requirements. We pretty much have to schedule around our venues When it comes to that stuff. So there are some really cool ones that I've been wanting to do for years that the logistics are just not really practical. Those are kind of like the exception, you know, but they're out there. So if you're anywhere near Portland and you want to try out a scenario, the Games Together is, as far as I know, the only place that's offering that, like, as a public community sort of thing.
So Games for the Human Heart, I just want to ask about a little bit of the content because I've been meaning to go to that, actually. Specifically for this little game that that comes with one of those like pocketbook, cardboard saddle stitched pocketbook type things. Comes with a deck of cards. You make a map. You're spotting out resources on the map. And I noticed the Games Where the Human Heart offered that as one of the options. And usually it's a double header for those, right?
It varies a lot. Games for the Human Heart has traditionally been a very curated event for reasons. So it's difficult for me to...
reasons?
Well, like, because of the logistical things that I've mentioned and because it deliberately dives into games that are meant to be, like, high-impact, like, emotionally evocative games, we definitely make sure that we have well-prepared facilitators and a supportive environment for those things. Because, you know, to a certain degree, I mean, I don't want to make these things sound dangerous or something like that, because I don't really think that that is true in most cases. Well, I don't think it's the games that are dangerous. Let's put it that way.
Fair enough.
I think that people who are careless can sometimes cause harm. It is something that, like, there's an extra layer of responsibility as opposed to, like, our other events where we're just, you know, playing, you know, cool indie games that aren't asking for that kind of upfront emotional investment. That's why that event is much more curated than others, at least as far as Games Together is concerned. That's what we do at Games for the Human Heart.
What if you wanted a LARP convention of some sort, or an indie LARP convention in the United States? Are there, like, a few events that we should know about?
To my knowledge, there is... I don't believe that there is a specific indie, quote-unquote, indie LARP or scenario festival in the United States.
Fair enough.
There are other conventions that, amongst, like, a variety of programming... include those things, or have groups of people that bring those things to those conventions. Locally, we briefly touched on this earlier, but I also coordinate the Indie Hurricane program for GameStorm, and bringing scenarios to GameStorm is one of the most essential aspects of that program. You are likely to find a selection of various scenarios and freeform games there. One of my favorite conventions to go to is Metatopia. It's in New Jersey in November. That's actually a playtesting convention that supports many different kinds of game styles. It's legit, and the organizers are really on top of their game. A lot of the strange, oddball games will pop up there, and if you're looking for them, you'll find them there. I believe that there is another event called Intercon that does mostly LARP, maybe entirely LARP. I've not been, but I don't believe that it's strictly quote-unquote indie LARP or scenario style. I believe that they also do traditional American-style LARPing there. And there are other events kind of around that I know occasionally do these things. Go Play Northwest sometimes has them, I'm told. I haven't been in a few years, and I can't really verify that. I also hear that they sometimes show up at Big Bad Con, which I think is in Oakland, San Francisco area. But that's what I know of. It's very possible that there are some smaller groups around that are exploring those with, like, a greater sense of purpose. But my understanding of all of those other events is that they will show up if someone happens to want to bring them, as opposed to, like, deliberately putting a spotlight on them. The Freeform Free-for-Alls that Games Together does in Portland, those are exclusively scenario-based things. They're usually like a full day or something like that. Like a full day of programming, so you'd come and play like three or four games or something like that over the course of a day. But yeah, there's a real gap there, and I hope that something comes along to fill that void.
Indeed. How long has Games Together been together?
Well, there are many different answers to that question.
How long have you been gathered for games?
I started the Ready Set Game open play story gaming event in 2011. Everything kind of blossomed off of that, and it eventually became beneficial for us to form an LLC, and then became more beneficial for us to be a nonprofit. So Games Together, our activity in Portland, like, goes back to 2011. Games Together came along sometime in, like, 2014, and then was an LLC, I'm sorry, was a nonprofit. So I guess my question is, like, which one do you want to know? Like, legally speaking, we weren't really around until 2014 or 2015 or something.
Okay. But it sounds like you guys, you guys had a ramp time up to that, then went through your business model sort of figuring out phase, and then continued and expanded your programming.
Yeah. Like, to be honest, I started Ready, Set, Game way back when just because I wanted to meet other people who wanted to, like, explore indie RPGs and story games.
Cool.
Like, I didn't have, like, these aspirations of what Games Together would later become, and it grew way larger and way faster than I anticipated. And that's been exciting. It's been incredibly rewarding working with the community to put on thought-provoking and heart-pulling games.
So now I'm going to ask about where your secret sauce, because I know that, you know, LARP communities as they go can be very touch-and-go. Hit and miss. Some communities that do LARP will be very insular. Others will be very open. Some will be very serious. Others will be more sort of lighthearted in the spirit of play. But it certainly sounds like whatever you're doing, you've created a recipe that is built for sustainability and expansion. Maybe you could talk to me about, like, what do you do that you feel really gets people? I mean, I know there's the intrinsic aspect of playing a game that opens up your emotive or empathic capabilities and allows you to explore sort of that emotional realm that you might not otherwise have a connection to in your day-to-day life. Case in point, the line game. I would never be a customs officer, nor am I an immigrant right now.
yeah, right.
Right. We're all gonna ditch the ship eventually, before too long, if the Dear Orange Leader is not kidnapped. So I know that there is an intrinsic level of motivation, but I mean, it seems like you've gotten the word out. Maybe you could talk about, like, you know, how do you get people interested? How do you what's the recipe for the pitch? How do you make it accessible?
That's another big topic. I think that there are a couple of fundamental things. We started with story gaming, and that's, like, what ultimately became, like, the groundwork for the rest of our organization. And I think that there's a reason why story gaming is particularly good at creating those kind of communities. It's creatively more accessible than other traditional role-playing games. What I mean by that is that the rule texts are much slimmer. The mechanics are less involved and more focused. It tends to share creativity creative input around the table with much higher degrees of equity. And they tend to be, well, maybe not the earliest ones, but more modern ones are designed with, like, social dynamics between the players in mind, which means that when we're talking about getting a community together to play story games, what we're asking people to do is actually a fairly vulnerable and intimate exercise. We're creating this space where people can be creatively spontaneous, and that is a kind of intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
So the bonds and friendships that I've seen built here in communities like these, they happen so fast, and people bond so deeply that if the as long as we don't have some kind of, you know, weird closed-minded club mindset, like, other people can like come into that. When RSG or Ready Set Game was growing up, one of the things I noticed is that we would get, like, the transient population of Portland. We would get people who would show up and they're like, I've been in Portland for 1 week and I don't know anybody. And, like, that was the most frequent kind of, like, new face that we would see. Or people who are, you know, just moved to Portland, like,
right,
everyone in the country, apparently.
Yeah. it always rains here. It's terrible.
And, you know, they're looking for friends and camaraderie and, you know, fun, too.
And you let them have it. No.
Yeah, but, like, and what they walk into there is, like, this space where they're sharing creativity and they're making friends really fast and they're seeing others do the same. And I think that like, we could talk about games till the cows come home, but, like, the primary deliverable that we provide for our community is camaraderie.
Camaraderie in an expanding sense. So it's not like you're a cagey, like, you know, this is my friend group, and we will play games, and it will be good. It's, this is a group that gets together and is open to whoever wants to play games.
Right. So that brings you to my next point. Games to Gather started getting lots of attention from other like partner organizations around the country on account of our conduct agreement and our policy.
Or our participation policy. About that.
I wrote most of the policy, like by drawing on policies by other community organizations that I really respect, and adapting them for our purposes with the permission of the people who wrote those policies. I think it's important to admit, especially in the modern day, that gaming and most gaming spaces has, amongst other things, a misogyny problem.
And that was Robert Lacoste speaking with Taylor Stokes of Games to Gather. They were starting to talk about a really interesting perspective in regards to preparation for LARPing, because like they had mentioned, there's this fairly intimate piece where you are talking about, you're creating a world, you're co-creating the story as you go. And one of the things they were starting to talk about were the conduct agreements that sort of like the house rules we kind of have here and our agreements on how we will behave towards one another, kind of set out what the expectations are before you walk into a situation where that highly detailed immersive LARPing brings you to this emotional point. Or I guess it's the opposite, actually.
Well, I can imagine. So you're surrounded with all these people who are, it's more active, interacting with other people who have the same interests as you, and you're excited, and you get to put all this effort into your costume if you want to, or your story, whatever you're interested in, or even role-playing, being a cook and just like bring all this food to the nerd. Because, you know, there's like all of these different roles that you can play. I could imagine being so excited. You need those codes of conduct to kind of be like, everybody calm down, let's not break anything.
Right, we have agreements, and it's sort of an intimate space, you know. Like people, and I meant to clear this up. I started going into you know, one delineation that they had said in that interview, you know, the highly detailed immersive LARP that's based on sci-fi or fantasy or something. And then more of what Games to Gather seems to be doing, which is the immersive and emotionally informed LARPing, where it's a little, like they had mentioned, like thinner like characters, and a little less like based on, you know, like the backstory and knowing that really intensely. Having the agreement when you walk into a place and you're playing a game specifically sort of made so that you're exploring kind of hard social issues is kind of a brilliant way to, like, you know, experiment and test, you know, conversations within a community and be able to do so in like a safe way.
And yeah, I really enjoyed that part as well. I'm glad you brought that up, because I really enjoy watching like sci-fi series, old and new, and they usually touch on the same topics. It's kind of like a soapbox, like a hidden soapbox in sci-fi,
absolutely,
where you take current issues, and like the new Star Trek is getting a lot of slack for that too, because you take relevant issues and you put them on a pedestal, but you disguise them as, these aren't refugees, these are aliens. So it's kind of like easier to put out there. And
yeah, it's like a little... like,
explore.
Yeah, like it's a coding that makes it a little more accessible in that way.
Kind of takes you a step back too, mm-hmm, so you can see it from a different perspective.
Yeah.
Because when you're so close to it, like we all are with social issues, it's hard to get somebody else's perspective.
Yeah. I took a look at the Games to Gather website and saw that they had a number of games available for download so that you can take a look through it, read the sort of setup and the background, and then be able to utilize those games in, you know, your own personal settings. If you had like folks that you wanted to play with, or if you wanted to open it up to community discussion. There were there was one that was a freeform game about depression and the clouded thoughts and ideas and indecisions that come with that. There was also a game called Making Silence, Breaking Silence, which was intended to demonstrate the risks and challenges of a victim of domestic violence. Like, what are the choices that you go through in trying to extricate yourself from a situation or not? Like, how do you then, you know, leave your abuser? And then what are the like consequent, like sort of considerations that you have to make in that regard? And it sounds like they have a lot of these sort of LARPs that center on, you know, like when we think of games, we think of it as like, you know, only goal-based in so much as you have this escapist thing, right? Like, yeah, I'm pretending to be like a turtle and my whole goal is to like get the special magical turtle food at the end of the road. You know, it's a little different.
I play that game.
Yeah. Oh, yeah? Okay, cool. We're going to play Turtle LARP after this.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, in contrast to that, like, you know, when we think of games having goals, the goals in themselves don't necessarily have to have this sort of, like, magic or, like, you know, a fantasy component. Like, oh, I'm going to make all the money or I'm building the city. Like, I personally will probably never make that money and I won't build a city, but I can have a goal of, like, you know, maybe having a really difficult conversation with my parents about, like, racism or, you know, like, how am I then confronting issues of, like, homophobia, ableism, things like that. In with people around me, like the goal then is to educate or to interrupt or whatever, you know.
And from listening to these interviews too, it does sound very community oriented. Everybody is communicating. There's so many different types of stories that mm-hmm. you can get involved in as well. And outside of the LARPing, everybody is so open to communicate. Like the group chats on, where is that?
Yeah, there are like different websites and stuff.
Yeah,
and
the meetup website. Yeah. They have all these group chats discussing like what they want to play. And like if anybody ever needs help, in every single interview we listen to, mm-hmm. they said, just go ahead and email us. Go ahead and ask us. We welcome everybody. Just drop on in.
Yeah, and that inclusivity is an important part of the LARPing and gaming community. Like he had mentioned, there were a lot of people who had just moved to the area that were looking to, you know, make connections with people. And it's a really cool way to do so, as well as maybe like explore some of the harder issues that you might experience.
It's also a good way for the nerds to get in the sunshine for once.
Yeah.
I know I have trouble with that.
I am never going to be in the sun if I can help it. I totally
inside LARPing
like,
only.
Yeah. Shade and parasols, please.
I gotcha.
You're listening to a Radio Geekly. I'm Becky and I'm joined by Godiva.
Hi.
And we're talking about LARPing and we just heard a great piece. Thank you, Rob, for recording this and the other pieces. But we heard from Taylor Stokes of Games to Gather. We're going to switch gears a little bit and hear from some folks that are doing more of what they were talking about in the American style, highly detailed, immersive LARPing. And that would be Dystopia Rising.
Yay.
I want to give a shout out to all of you who are on your way to Long Branch this weekend for the Dystopia Rising gathering. Hey, you're listening to KBOO and we are about to hear from Autumn and Jed. And they're going to tell us a little more about Dystopia Rising, what that includes and feels like. It'll be a lot different for them, what you were just hearing. And so...
Welcome to A Radio Geekly. I'm Robert Lacoste, and I'm here with Autumn and Jed from Dystopia Rising, Oregon.
Correct.
So, guys, I've heard a lot about Dystopia Rising, Oregon, or Dystopia Rising in general. It seems to be one of the largest LARPs available right now in the United States.
It's looking like it. Currently there are, I think they just opened a couple new branches. I think there's 16 branches around the United States now. Got them all up and down. There's three on the West Coast, and then as you go further east, there's more and more and more.
Oh, wow. Wow. So how many players are we talking about?
We just ran our last event this weekend. We had 120 players just at our event. The Dystopia Rising Facebook page just hit 6,000 members.
Wow.
So,
what is the premise of the game? What does one do when one LARPs in Dystopia Rising? What do you bring with you? How long does it go?
Yeah. I'll let our storytelling director, Jed, here.
So, I
cover the story part.
So we're set in a world of post-apocalypse, where the apocalypse happened 800 years in the past. Humanity lost. Everyone running around playing the game is playing some kind of mutant. We're the mutated strains of survivors that made it out of the zombie apocalypse that included not only a virus-style zombie that raised all the corpses and everyone who died, but a nuclear element as well, as the countries of the world nuked their own cities trying to stem the tide. So you get that really fun combination of zombies and mutated monsters and horrible creatures coming out of the dark and that kind of thing.
Very cool.
No, it's very, it's a lot of fun. It is, we describe it as a zombie horror survival game.
So the resource element, what would be a good example of a resource?
For us, the biggest one is all of your gear, the things that your character needs to fight zombies or to make new things breaks. It all breaks over time. It all expires. So you have to acquire the resources to make them. We use a relatively simple crafting system where we have different kinds of scrap, just things you find laying around, which actually get into the world. The biggest way they get into the world is through a giant mini game that goes on through the course of the LARP, where you go out on a big scavenger hunt.
Oh,
we hide cool. several hundred business card size cards throughout. We play on a 200
acres.
Wow. And we've hidden cards throughout the entire thing throughout the weekend. And some of the players go out and scrounge them up and go see if they can find them and bring them back.
Wow. Cool.
One of the really fun things about DR, though, is if you're not into a scavenger hunt, you don't have to do that part of the game. You can absolutely be a character who just wants to go fight some zombies. And for us, that means a foam weapon, Nerf gun, light contact, live combat system. So you actually go out and you beat the zombies by beating your friends who are dressed up as zombies.
Cool. So how many other people on staff do you have for one of these events?
So we're the only people who do this as a job. And it's a labor of love for sure. I maintain a team of between 8 and 12 writers who are in charge of putting together all the different plot elements. And then
I have a team of, I think, about 11 players who help run the logistical side of things. So, like, they help fill out cards because all of your resources are represented by these little business cards.
Oh.
And you have to have, you know, a person with the correct...
Credentials,
I guess. They have to be listed as like a marshal. We call them marshals.
Okay.
Non-player characters. All of the zombies, the monsters, merchants that come in that are used for all the plot elements are played by the players on their NPC block. So everyone signs up as part of the weekend for a 4-hour block of time where they take off their character costume and go be one of the things we've brought to the table. And we have costuming for all that. We provide all that equipment. It's a very small, effectively movie set worth of, you know, extras and everything else that we put together to give. Our goal is to give a world where we're going to stress your imagination as little as possible in terms of having to, like, pretend. We never ask you to pretend that there's a person where there isn't a person.
Okay.
So if there's going to be a dozen zombies, there's going to be a dozen people dressed in full zombie makeup.
Right.
Which is one of the things that's a little different from a whole other style of LARPing called parlor LARPing, where you might do a lot of description ahead of time and have everyone hold the image in their head.
So would you be the maker of puppets? Or?
We've made a couple.
We've made a few. We've had some of our players have made some for us just because they love seeing the crazy things that go out. And people love seeing things that they have made, like go and terrorize their friends.
Yeah, we have a couple of players that are some amazing builders that have made us.
There's this giant wolf. Like, it's huge. I just its head. I need two hands to carry just the head part.
It ends up being a 3-person puppet to man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So how does one, like, get into the, how does one access the game? I saw your website, which is maybe...
It's dystopiarisingoregon.com. Get started is really easy. We have a reduced base entry for your first game so that it's not a really heavy... financial burden to just come try it out for a weekend. You'll have access to the bunks and the cabins, the entertainment for the weekend. You just have to bring your own food and your bedding and clothing, and we we take care of the rest of it.
Wow.
So a first-time player would email us, hopefully. You can just show up at the event, and we'll take care of you. We have two marshals whose whole job it is to help new players get started and figure out how to make characters and all that. Contacting us ahead of time via email, dystopiarisingoregon@gmail.com. Dystopiarising Oregon ends up being the name for everything to make it easy. you contact us ahead of time and we'll walk you through character creation. All things considered, for people who've played role-playing games before, this is perhaps the easiest character creation system I've ever seen. 15 minutes.
Yeah, it's super easy. So you'll go look through the book. You really only have two really hard decisions to make, and that is what strain you're going to start as. In most games, it's going to be your race, but in Dystopia Rising, we call it strain mostly because we really want to avoid anything that sounds like race.
Right, racial connotations.
Yeah, we don't do anything with race because that's a very much out of character issue. But you'll go to the website and there it'll show you which strains are common, and you'll want to pick one of those. Then you can read more detail in the book, which is available for free as a download on our website or drivethroughrpg.com. And you'll pick one of those strains. Once you have your strain picked, you'll go and you'll pick your profession. And the profession gives you access to certain skills. Once you've decided kind of what strain and profession you want, you have 13 points to spend. 13 experience points, or we call them build points.
With the cost of skills, 13 points amounts to, you're going to pick 4, maybe 3 skills. So that's it. And they're not built in trees like other role-playing games for the most part. So you don't have to... There's really no room to do the classic crunchy, I'm going to figure out the best combination. Just pick some things you want to do. We have a couple of different crafting skills going. You can be someone who brews. So if it were a more fantasy-based setting, you can imagine making potions. We have things that lets you, you know, heal when you drink. You can make armor and you can make weapons and you can make big... altogether, the crafting system is pretty deep. We have... So you start off very simple and eventually after... You know, there are items that some people haven't been able to make, or are only just now being able to make after like 2 years of working towards this goal, some of which allow them to, you know, drastically alter, you know, the rules around them on a very limited.
So how long have you guys been involved in this? How long has this been going on?
So Dystopia Rising started, I think, about 7 or 8 years ago in New Jersey. Of course, the zombie apocalypse is going to start in New Jersey.
Love it.
and it was just, some friends getting together. This guy, Michael Pucci, he created this game to play with his friends. And it just kind of, one afternoon in the backyard, kind of grew into a weekend all over the country now. Because people in Texas were like, oh, that sounds really fun. I want to do that. So people in Florida, oh, that sounds really fun. I want to do that. And these couple of crazy kids in Oregon, oh, that sounds really fun. I want to do that.
Very cool.
So we've been playing for almost four years. Because we started playing up in Dystopia Rising Washington first. Back when it was Dystopia Rising Pacific Northwest. And just after our first game, we were completely in love with the system and the feel and the world. We're like, we want to do this all the time, but we don't want to have to drive 6 hours. So
it's up near Seattle?
Yeah.
Gotcha. And where's the Oregon one?
The Oregon one, right now, we're kind of bouncing between Philomath and Lebanon.
Okay. Which is what?
It's about an hour south of Portland.
Okay, that's very doable.
Yeah. Hour and a half, depending on traffic.
And there's a bunk waiting for you, so yeah.
I mean, we use a Girl Scout camp most of the year, but in the middle of the summer when they're having the Girl Scout camp is out near Philomath. In the summer when they're having scout camp, obviously they don't want a zombie apocalypse during the scout camp, so we use a large private park outside of Lebanon. Hopefully present sort of what like any of the horror movies centered around a carnival is what we're going to go for that. Whereas the one out in out at the Girl Scout camp ends up feeling much, you know, it's very heavily wooded. So you've got your classic, Crystal Lake feel. It's actually around a large They have their own lake out in the campground, so there is a lake in the middle of it, and we play on that, and you have your monsters and weird creatures coming out of the woods and you can't see. So you have two different feels as we move between the two sites.
Give me a vision into, say, the schedule. I'm picturing, okay, I drive an hour and a half south from Portland. I arrive at, let's say, the Girl Scout camp for Savies. Mm-hmm. I unload my stuff into a bunk.
So at 4 p.m., people can show up, go put their stuff down in a bunk, have an hour to just kind of...
4 p.m. You know, on a Friday?
On a Friday, yes, okay. I'm sorry. On a Friday afternoon. New players is going to be slightly different because we're going to have you sit down and talk to one of our new player marshals, and they'll help you kind of build a character, decide what you want to do. Because a lot of people want to know, you know, what does the game need? What should I do? What would be best for the game? And really, whatever you want to play, there will always be a need. Like, you know, the game will always need more farmers. The game will always need more doctors. We can always use more healers. Because
there's never a downside to being the fifth paladin in this system. Like, we can always use another guy with a sword and a shield.
Arrive, check in, make a character if need be, claim a bunk.
And actually, for new players, we have a cabin. When we're at our Girl Scout camp and have bunks, we have a cabin set aside specifically for new players who maybe didn't come into game knowing anyone. You can kind of be in the same room with all these other new players who maybe don't know anyone and start making new friends.
Gotcha. It's the train on the world on the way to Westworld, right?
Yeah,
and gives us the opportunity to also gives us a way for all of our established players to know where to go make new friends.
Gotcha.
So people can come in there. Then about 8 o'clock, we gather everybody up to do opening announcements, cover. Necessary information about the plot or safety reminders, or if something has changed, if there's a tree down somewhere that means we can't use an area or something like that. You do all that, and we actually start game as close to 9 p.m. as we can.
Cool.
And then you play from 9 p.m. until 11 a.m. on Sunday.
It's going to be more freeform. We do have plots and we call them modules that we send out throughout the weekend. Players end up writing their own plots, like just player generated plot that they'll go chase their own things, and they all have plans of what they want to do, and sometimes our plans are to come in and ruin those plans.
Survival in DR, success in DR in game is all about making friends. It is the worst game to ever try and play solo mode you will ever find. It's almost guaranteed to either fail or be really boring. You can survive zombies by hiding from them pretty successfully, but if you spend your entire weekend hiding...
Yeah, no.
Some people really like it, few. And they will hide in the bushes, and they'll stay up on the back trails, and they'll come back two or three times to get something to eat. And they're spending their weekend communing with nature, and that's great. I don't recommend it for most people.
That's because
that's not how most people would find fun for about 36 to 38 hours of game. During game, the storytellers are putting out about 3 different discrete plot modules an hour. And that's kind of the goal is we'll put some things in from time to time to create political intrigue. And once you get two groups politicking against each other, then they're going to run with it with way more creativity and gusto than any team of writers could ever put together. It's organic and it's real, and it creates these amazing branching storylines.
How do you prevent people from getting lost?
The sites we use have relatively easy to find edge guidelines. The Girl Scout camp is ringed either by a lumber company that has recently done a clear cut along the entire edge.
So you get to the edge of the forest.
So when you get to the edge of the forest, you've gone too far. If I need to go and find them, if we have an emergency situation, we have a ranger on site with us who can drive all the trails on an off-road vehicle. Just safety things we do have to consider because there is wildfire season. It's never come anywhere near to close, but we have to have, you know, safety plans for all of that.
Certainly. Boffers, do folks make their own, or is that something that you can, like, get a loner if it's your first game? Or
If it's your first game, we have loners. We generally figure by your right? Your third game. You've decided this is the thing you're going to do. You're going to keep doing it. And maybe you'll start crafting your own boffers and various weapons. Some people get so creative with the boffers they make. I'm constantly impressed.
You tend to start out with the tube sword.
Right. The equivalent of the wooden sword.
Yeah. And then you grow into, we have a couple of foam crafters that do commission work. If you wanted to put the kind of money down, because we have a couple that will charge $100, $200 for their time. But they will create things that I have had to go and run out because I thought someone was actually using a stick. They managed to make foam look like, to the degree that it fooled me. I thought someone had snuck on and was trying to hit people with a staff.
At a moment, someone was like swinging one at me, and I had to make them stop so I could check and see that it was actually foam because it looked like they were about to club me with an actual walking stick. I was terrified.
That's how good some of them get.
So good.
Yeah. Costuming is another one. We can put you in some lower costuming for your first event. We generally recommend people to try and come in their own because you're going to be more comfortable. And costuming for Dystopia Rising at the simplest is a trip to Goodwill or your secondhand store. Go get something that's already as beat up as you can find it and then beat it up a little bit more. And that's pretty much because it is a post-future world, or it's a futuristic world that started from right now anyway.
Okay, so the next game, when is that?
June 16th, 17th, and 18th at Cheadle Lake Park in Lebanon, Oregon.
16th, 17th, and 18th, Cheadle Lake Park in Lebanon, Oregon.
Yes.
All right.
Pre-registration is currently open at dystopiarisingoregon.com.
Very cool. Well, thank you guys so much for detailing all this out. This is something I'm probably going to be seeing you for in at some future date. I have to make the time.
Absolutely.
But this, I mean, sounds like a great weekend.
We have a lot of fun.
So much fun.
All right. You're with me, Godiva Lee, and Becky listening to Radio Geekly, and you just heard Dystopia Rising with Jed and Autumn. Thank you, Robert, for doing that interview. I'm going to bring up dystopiarisingoregon.com. You just heard June 16th through 18th. They're going to be having their event once every month as well. Ready Set Games does open play. You can contact Portland Game Store's Facebook and communicate with them about that. Meetup.com/games-to-gather has a bunch of different groups. June 12th is going to be the soonest that they get together at 7 p.m. at the Tabor Space.
That's going to be cool.
Oh, yeah. Groups for LGBTQ, women's groups as well. They're also meeting at the Rogue Pub on the 26th at 7 p.m. Or you can also do Go Play Northwest in Seattle, July 7th at 9 p.m. GoPlayNorthwest.org is where you would find more info about that.
Wonderful. Yeah, you did it.
Yay.
And we will have more of that information on our online presence. We are on the KBOO site, kboo.fm/Radio Geekly. Look us up on Facebook. We are Radio Geekly on Twitter as well. You can join our collective. If you go to our site on kboo.fm, you'll find us. And our email address is radiogeekly@kboo.org. This is Becky. This is Godiva.
Yay!
And you've been listening to a Radio Geekly. We look at geek culture from all perspectives. Tune in next month, first Fridays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.